Hello, everyone around the world. Once again, this is Eddie Goldman on No Holds Barred. There will be another major mixed martial arts show this coming Saturday, July 22nd at the Forum in the Los Angeles area. The WFA, the World Fighting Alliance, will be putting on an event there. And if you can't make it, it will be available in the United States on pay-per-view. So check your local listings. Unfortunately, just purely for personal reasons, I'm going to be unable to make it out to that show, but I do encourage everybody that can to go check it out at the Forum and the media. I'm not sure if there's still room for media credentials, but anybody that's from the media to attempt to cover that event, and we will definitely be speaking with in future editions of this show with people who attended that event, and we're hoping and expecting that this is going to be a stellar production and a stellar event. So again, check out the WFA and their website, WFA.tv. Before we get to our guest for today, an old friend and someone I worked with for many, many years in many different capacities, Bob Meyerowitz, a word from our sponsors, and including mention of our newest sponsor, Chincheck Sportswear at chincheck.com. Now, hear about our sponsors. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, that's a word from our sponsors. Make sure to check them all out. Now, Bob Meyerowitz, for those who are unaware, was the head of Semaphore Entertainment Group, which is the company, along with Horian Gracie and Art Davey, that started the original Ultimate Fighting Championship back in 1993. That was eventually sold to the current owner, Zuffa, in January 2001. So Bob was there from day one of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. He comes out of radio and the media. He put on many other pay-per-views in the past, the New Kids on the Block, one of the few very successful musical pay-per-view TV shows. He was involved in radio. He started radio syndication. A lot of people remember the King Biscuit Flower Hour going back, I think it was around the 1970s. And he's been all over the place in the world of media. And he started up 1999, IATA.com, the late great internet talk radio network, where he was my boss there, where I hosted a show also known as No Holds Barred, which was a daily show from the wonderful studios that they had in the Times Square area in New York City. Bob Meyerowitz, after being out of the mixed martial arts game for a little bit over 5 years, is all set to come back. We talk with him about what his plans are, which are not 100% set in stone at this point. Also, what his views are of the people that bought the company that he once led. And as usual, our discussion is very no holds barred. Here's our discussion with Bob Meyerowitz.
It's well known that a lot of myths and hoaxes are spread on the internet. Probably everybody's seen these appeals about a dying girl somewhere that you have to send money to. Then there's the son of the deposed king of Nigeria, or maybe it was Iraq, who needs you to handle his $20 million if you just give him access to your bank account, and all sorts of other things. But one of the recent set of hoaxes and myths and nonsense that's being spread on the internet is coming from many newspaper writers, in particular boxing writers from the obsolete print medium. They've been saying, and I've seen this in Bernard Fernandez, Ron Borges, and Kevin Ioli, and many others, all of whom I know, all of whom have my home phone number, my cell phone number, my email addresses, and I've sat next to at events, that the UFC, before 2001, before the Fertittas and Dana White and Zuffa bought it, had no rules, that it was running from athletic commissions, it was never sanctioned by athletic commissions, you could do anything pretty much at any time, there were no weight classes, and the level of fighters were basically a bunch of barbarians or drunks that were found in a bar somewhere, which is more or less how they put it. That really goes, in my view, the same category as the son of the deposed king of whatever it was and the mythical dying girl in terms of credibility. And we have someone on the line who knows about all this because he was there from day one, because he was one of the founders of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. He was the head of SEG, Semaphore Entertainment Group, which had produced the UFCs. He was also the CEO of IATA.com and my old boss, and he's going to tell us a little bit about the past, the present, and the future in the mixed martial arts. And of course, I'm referring to Mr. Bob Meyerowitz, and I guess it's kind of ironic again to say it, but welcome to No Holds Barred. It's a familiar name.
Well, it is good, I suppose, to be back, although I don't feel like I ever left. But it is good to be back and to be actively involved again and to be working with fighters again and to be working with someone like you again.
Well, let me ask you first off, because there have been, I've talked with you, and I know nothing is announced or anything like that, and there have been some things written about it, but what are you doing at this point in terms of re-entering possibly the world of mixed martial arts? What can you say at this point?
Well, I have been thrilled and astounded at how big mixed martial arts has become. And when we started it 13 years ago, it was a brand new sport, and it was really a sport to see which of the martial arts was the best. And we really looked to put together fights that would mix the different martial arts so that we would have a great kick-fighting champion versus a great Russian sambo fighter, a great wrestler against a great jiu-jitsu fighter. And we were, at that point, lucky enough to have the greatest in the whole world doing it. One of the things that has happened is that there's now training for mixed martial arts. So you don't necessarily have guys who were the same kind of champions we had. What I would like to do is try to bring back to the sport, now with all this popularity, bring back the great athletes and really take it now to the next level, and perhaps the level it really should have been a long time ago, where people recognize this as a great sport. One of the things that has happened to it, it has become, and it's really funny because just as you say, Eddie, they're saying that we had no rules when of course we always had rules.
Right.
They have made it now with supposedly rules, but we always had rules, but they have made it into a much lower level sport, and it's become more of a spectacle than a sport. And so they're getting guys, you know, who are willing, just like we really didn't, but just like they accused us of, where they're just getting guys who really don't have great credentials as fighters, but guys who do have great tattoos, and putting them in and having them hit each other. And the truth is that they have put a much, much, much greater emphasis on hitting. And most of those guys who think they can knock somebody out, if they were to fight a boxer, would get knocked out very easily and very quickly. So what I am looking to do and what I think can be done is we take the popularity of this sport, and now we bring it to a level where we bring in really great athletes and really compelling figures. And it is interesting that for all Zuffa has done, and Dana White has been all over the place, Dana White is famous, but they haven't made any athletes famous.
That's a very interesting observation. Some of the early UFCs, when you went over the people that fought in them, Mark Coleman, an Olympic wrestler, was one of the early champions. He beat Dan Severn, who had been an All-American a couple of times, and an alternate for the Olympic team. And Bobby Douglas, when he coached Arizona State, said Dan Severn was technically probably the best wrestler that he had seen. Bobby's a member of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and an Olympian in his day himself. On and on, when Coleman fought Maurice Smith, the world kickboxing champion, one of the greatest matches in UFC history. Frank Shamrock, king of Pancras, numerous times trained in the original Lion's Den, grew up in that. defeating Kevin Jackson, an Olympic gold medalist wrestler, now one of the coaches for USA Wrestling and Freestyle, and on and on and on. Of course, the Hoist Gracie, you know, everybody knows his credentials when he was fighting in his prime, when he was younger, obviously, in his mid and late 20s. And you could just talk about so many people, the level that they came in with, and to think that, you know, these are the champions. Some of the lower guys weren't necessarily as good, but these are the people that stood out. And I'll tell you, Randy Couture was not well known in the sports world outside of Greco-Roman wrestling and, you know, people that follow college wrestling in the state of Oklahoma. And he became a star. And, I mean, just some of the buy rate numbers, I think it was UFC 4, 5, and 6 were getting almost the same numbers that they've been getting recently, with maybe only 40% of the homes that have pay-per-view capability in those days had it. And even some of the homes that had it, it was a big deal to get pay-per-view. So you'd have to take your box down to the cable company and get a different box. It was a whole big deal. Now you press a button, it's there.
That's right. Andy, Eddie, you're very, very, very right there. When we started, pay-per-view was a novelty. And very few homes had it. And B, to order it was a whole big deal. And in fact, I once did something just to show how hard it was. We're at a convention, called and tried to order something in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It just was a very difficult thing to do. Also, we did not have the budget that they have now to promote it, and yet we were getting those buy rates. And you're right. We took Randy Couture, who was really a great athlete, who was a terrific person, a great wrestling champion, and made him into a famous athlete. And he was great for the sport. He was great for us.
Right, and also at that time, the internet, the World Wide Web, was much more in its infancy, and while it was there and played a role, it wasn't like today where it's, you know, so many people have it.
But we also had Oleg Taktarov,
right,
who was the Russian Sambo champion.
Mm-hmm.
He had major people from all over the world. It was quite an incredible group of men.
What do you think these guys compared to now? Because some of the most prominent people that are fighting in the UFC today actually go back in the day. Chuck Liddell, Couture has recently said he's retired. Tito Ortiz and some of these people were good fighters. They both were Division I college wrestlers also, which you can, you know, they don't really emphasize too much because I don't think they understand what that means to the level of athlete. But I think some of the guys that are coming out of their so-called reality show, if they had fought in the early UFCs under any kind of rules, would have been slaughtered. And that's no offense, because I think there are a lot of very tough, courageous guys.
Tough, courageous guys. They don't have the skills that the UFC had. I mean, they simply don't. Tito Ortiz is terrific, and I admire him. He lost to Frank Shamrock when I was doing it.
Also one of the greatest, most memorable matches ever in UFC history.
It was an incredible match, and it was, and Frank Shamrock is probably one of the greatest fighters who ever fought.
Yeah, I'd have him, if I had to do a pound-for-pound list, he'd definitely be a candidate for number one.
Mm-hmm. And Hoist, in his time, I mean, I don't quite get the point of bringing back overaged fighters. I don't know what their thought is.
The thought is it got maybe 500,000-600,000 buys, and they made a lot of money off
of it. You're right. That's it. You know, and it makes money.
But if you put Mike Tyson versus Butterbean on pay-per-view, you might get some people to watch that, too.
You know, or if you, you know, brought back Willie Mays to bat against Roger Clemens, people
mm-hmm.
might want to watch it, but it's not fair to Willie Mays. And it's not fair to Hoist Gracie to ask him at this point, 41 or 42, however old he is, to come back and fight against young fighters. And it's not fair to Ken Shamrock. I say it's not fair. Look, let's face it, those guys got a lot of money and wanted to do it. But what does it prove? It doesn't mean that Matt Hughes is a better fighter than Hoist Gracie. It means Matt Hughes at this age is better than Hoist Gracie at his age.
Yeah, exactly, and I don't think a lot of the fans understand that, because one of my basic criticisms is that now that they've been sanctioned in so many places, they're not promoting it like a sport. To me, I mean, you mentioned the idea of a spectacle. That was the debate in the early and mid-90s. Should it be a sport or a spectacle? I think it's morphed a little bit into should it be a sport or so-called sports entertainment. And some of the people, you know, our old colleague Dave Meltzer, who I respect very much, although sometimes I agree with him, sometimes I don't. And, of course, another, you know, IATA, he had the top-rated show in IATA. He and his people have recently been writing how, in a positive way, that UFC is being promoted exactly as the fake pro wrestling. He doesn't use that pejorative term, but I do. And I think that's the biggest problem with it. It's not being promoted like a sport where you bring in the top athletes and you have them all compete, and whoever wins, wins. And sometimes it's the favorite, and sometimes there's an upset, just like in any other sport. And, of course, the fights in UFC are real fights. But in terms of promoting it, they're not doing it in the way that virtually any other sport is doing it.
And they really have sort of missed the boat on who is the greatest fighter of the moment. I don't know.
They don't want to know either, because there are people who have beaten some of their champions.
Mm-hmm.
And again, no offense to their champions, and I've said this before, I think the fighters, and especially the top fighters in the UFC, would fight King Kong and Godzilla in one night if they were allowed to. But Chuck Liddell was knocked out very decisively a couple of years ago in Pride by Quentin Jackson. They didn't bring him in, and now he's fighting in the main event this Saturday on the new WFA show in Los Angeles. Lyoto Machida is a guy that's the only guy to defeat Rich Franklin in mixed martial arts. They didn't bring him in, and now he's fighting in the WFA. And now they're bringing in Wanderlei Silva to fight Chuck Liddell, which is kind of like a style matchup. But, you know, Silva's still an excellent fighter, but he's lost a couple of matches recently. He may have lost a step, and there are a lot of questions about them doing that, but that's really more the exception than the rule. And when they didn't have contracts with guys like Jens Pulver and BJ Penn, they stripped them of their title. That's something that you can't even do in boxing when you change promoters.
Well, you know, it is a difficult issue for the UFC, but I think the, you know, I would have to say that this WFA seems like they really have the right idea.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get good fighters and put together good fights, and putting together good fights is as much an art as it is a science.
Mm-hmm.
It is not necessarily to put in two guys who will fight, you know, the perfect fight. You want two, as much as you can, two different styles to fight each other. And you want to see how they will do against that. That's what you're looking to do. And one of the things they simply haven't done is create any new stars.
Right.
And you look at what the UFC has, and Liddell, Couture, Ortiz, all four for me.
Exactly.
And I don't even know. I guess Orlovsky lost again.
Yeah. I did not see it. I wasn't going to pay money for that, but everything I read, that it was a unanimous decision. He may have been injured during the fight, but how that affected it, I don't know. I read Sylvia won in a very lackluster performance, according to the reviews, won a five-round unanimous decision over for his title. But see, that brings up some interesting points too, because some of these articles not only talk about the level of fighters, and these boxing writers to me are very derelict in their duty, because maybe these guys didn't ever follow wrestling or martial arts, although there's really no excuse why they never did. But in any case, they're not familiar with it. It's really easy to find the backgrounds of these people. And then there's a question where they just repeat this stuff that I'm presuming they get either from Dana White directly or from a UFC PR person, you know, that UFC was never sanctioned, in fact, ran from sanctioning before these guys took over in early 2001. what I mentioned this to you a couple of days ago when I was talking with you. In 96 and 97, when the New York Times, another one of my favorite targets, came out and slandered the UFC, and it was then called No Holds Barred Fighting in general at the time, they ran all this stuff about it, and I asked you, and you know, you had an office in 57th Street, is in the phone book, very easy to find. Had any of these people ever contacted you from the New York Times for this article? And the answer you said no, that I was the first journalist anywhere to contact you, even though this had all been over television and radio and so forth and so on. And that was, you know, almost 10 years ago. Now, there are all these articles about the UFC. Have any of these people today, these many years later, contacted you or attempted to contact you to find out about what really went on back in the day?
Not one. Not one person contacts me. When I used to go on television and do interviews, and they would say, what do you say to your critics? And I'd say, the same thing I'm going to say to you. Have you ever seen the show? And they always answer no. They were criticizing something they never saw. They were writing about something they never saw. They were saying things without ever simply checking a fact. And it was, as you say, some of the most reputable news groups you could find were doing this. And I am sorry to single out one person, but I will say that when I was being interviewed, I think on MSNBC, by Neil Cavuto, and he said, what do you say? And I said, the first thing I say is, have you ever seen the show? And he said, yes, I have.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, then I have to give you credit because you're the first person who's answered yes.
Mm-hmm.
Then as he started to ask questions, I could tell that he had really never seen the show, but I didn't say anything.
He'd probably just seen a pre-edited clip of it.
When we got off the air, he said, you know, I have to apologize to you because I never did see the show. When you asked me the question, you caught me by surprise. I answered yes, and then I didn't know. He said, the whole rest of the interview, I didn't know what to do, and I apologized to you.
This is like, you know, the Salem witch trials.
So what happens here is I'm beginning to appreciate a guy who may have lied to me. But at least he was willing to admit it. You know, it just was a very, it still is a very strange time. And there was just recently a whole article that was so full of incorrect information. Just incorrect. Anybody could find out the truth. There's nothing here has been hidden. And obviously whoever wrote the article didn't take any time to check any fact and just took whatever was given to them.
And these guys who are writing it, these particularly the boxing writers, like I said, the boxing writers all know me. I mean, I was Ron Borges's editor at Boxing Ranks. He'd send the articles in to me, and I'd fix them up and put them in. As an editor, I don't like to change the thrust and the content, but, you know, if something's misspelled or there's a typo or grammar and stuff like that, I'll change all that. These guys know how to get in touch with me very easily. Yeah, and so the fact that they haven't done it or attempted to get in touch with you is just, you know, it just shows a dereliction of duty. And you got to ask yourself, are they trying to be journalists, or are they just sort of repeating, you know, what? And the other question, what else are they repeating?
Well, you know, you're going after the journalists, but we also, when we were doing the show in New York with New York State's permission, we had gone before the Athletic Commission. We had every single thing approved.
Under the current UFC rules of that time, in late 96.
Correct. As you, I'm sure, know, we were also approved by the New Jersey State Athletic Commission, and we were also approved by the Louisiana State Athletic Commission, Mississippi. We had many, many athletic commissions that approved us.
I put a list of shows when SEG owned UFC that were approved, that were not only approved, but were actually sanctioned by commissions. The commissions were there. They did the weigh-ins, the medicals, the whole nine yards.
But let me just go back to New York. So we were approved by New York, and for the first and only time in the history of New York, they changed a law under an emergency ruling where they could do it in less than, I think they normally need 30 days, but they did it in 24 hours. I got a call from the I believe it was the Daily News, would I comment on the new rules that they set up for it. I said, there can't be new rules. I didn't get them. And the only one who's doing the show is me. If there were new rules, they would have to give them to me.
Right. Yeah, you know, they didn't even act that fast in 9/11.
I get a call from, that's correct, in 9/11 they didn't use their emergency powers. I get a call from the New York Times, what do you think of the new rules? So now I thought, well, if two organizations are calling me, I called the New York State Athletic Commission, and I say, I understand you have new rules. They say, yes. I say, well, since I'm the only one doing a fight, can I get them, please? They said no. I said, what do you mean no? The Times has them, the Post has them. They said, we're not giving them out officially until tomorrow. So I called the New York Times. I said, I'll give you an exclusive. Send me those rules. And that's how I got to see the rules.
And that shows you, you know, how political it was. To me, it was like a madness, like I said earlier, like the Salem witch trials. People just went absolutely insane trying to blame the violence of society by a professional combat sport with top-level athletes from, jiu-jitsu and kickboxing and wrestling and shoot fighting and martial arts all over the place. And people were not interested, just like anything else, they were not interested in the facts getting in the way of their theories.
That's right. And, you know, all this about attaching it to violence, and we used to say there's never been a drive-by kicking, you know. That wasn't what the violence was. It wasn't what the problem is.
And you know, maybe because you also have a background in boxing, and you could know that you could hear this story 100 times a day of boxers, and you'll hear a similar thing from wrestling and martial arts, that people say when they were young, they were in trouble. I mean, this is Frank Shamrock's story and Ken Shamrock's story.
Yep.
They said when they were young, before they got into training in the martial arts, they got into fights on the street, they did all kinds of things that were bad and wrong, and that this helped straighten them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you want to do it, get these people involved in the martial arts. You hear the same thing, as I said, from boxers and from many other people.
If you have children, you want your children. It is a very good thing for a child to do, to learn the martial arts. It is great discipline. It is great mental training. It is great physical training. And it's something that stands them in good stead their entire life. Without any question.
Now, the other question was, now we talked a little bit about New York, so it not only was it you were not running from athletic commissions, but you were going to athletic commissions and getting double-crossed by New York, which then, by the way, changed its rules at the last minute. There was a second show for the Buffalo area. You actually ran in the Buffalo area in September of 95 at a time when, by law, the New York Commission had no jurisdiction over it. But even so, you still went to the New York Commission. There was supposed to be a show in the Buffalo area in February 2007. They pulled the plug on that one by coming up with, and the rules they came up with, I don't know if I ever saw the whole thing, but I heard you had to wear headgear and they changed the size of the cage and all sorts of stuff, which the sole purpose was to prevent the show from happening.
They said that it had to take place in a boxing ring. They said they had to wear headgear. You were allowed, under their rules, this isn't my rules, you could grab the headgear. So we went before the judge and said, had John McCarthy demonstrated, if you grab somebody by his headgear and throw him, you'll break his neck and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
If you do this in
it's banned in football, it's a face mask penalty.
That's
in football.
Correct, exactly. You do this in a boxing ring, people are going to fall out and get hurt.
Which I've seen, unless you take extra...
All these things which, quite frankly, made the sport more dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
People who don't know the sport don't understand. People never seemed to comprehend that if you're going to ride a motorcycle and you want to protect your head, put on gloves. No, you wouldn't. You put on a helmet. Gloves don't protect someone's head. They protect someone's hands.
Right. Ben Roethlisberger should have known that, I think.
Yeah. and the sport, and again, it is great to see And I don't know if I mentioned this to you the other day, but I went out to dinner with my family, and we went to this restaurant. Next to it was a dojo, and all it said is mixed martial arts.
Wow.
It didn't say jiu-jitsu, it didn't say taekwondo, karate, it said mixed martial arts.
You know, when I went to high school in a small place called Lynbrook, Long Island, which is near the Queens border, and academically it was a very good school, but athletically, the wrestling team really wasn't much, which is why I was able to start on the team. And when I was there, that was the only combat sport in the area, was wrestling through the schools. Now, a couple blocks from the school, Rodrigo Gracie now is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu dojo. And obviously such a thing wouldn't have been possible back in the Stone Ages when I was going to high school. But I always wondered, you know, if they, if something like that was there back in those days, what would I have gotten into if something like that was available when I could get out? Now, earlier you mentioned the New Jersey Commission, because there are basically a number of major commissions in the United States. You talked about New York, how you went to New York, got it approved, and then they double-crossed you. New Jersey, it was approved. I was at that show, and I recently found a T-shirt from that show because there was the heavyweight title fight between Randy Couture and Kevin Randleman. I remember telling Larry Hazard, who's still the commissioner in the Jersey State Athletic Control Board, you got some great athletes on this show. You got, I told him about Couture's background, a four-time Greco-Roman national champion, two-time runner-up in the NCAAs, and Kevin Randleman, a two-time NCAA champion and one-time runner-up. And he actually wasn't that aware of that. He said, well, he's glad, you know, really glad that those kind of people were involved. Obviously, since it was a heavyweight fight, there were weight classes, you know, at the time, which came in 97. The California Commission, which is still embroiled in sort of internal politics, what's going on in the state of California, I was at a hearing, I believe it was shortly before that, in early 2000, of the California Commission, and there was a UFC representative among the people there pushing for the rules which were approved by the commission unanimously, but were later not adopted because of the internal politics, not having anything to do with the sport itself. They finally, you know, obviously this year started running shows. And Jeff Blatnick, who was then, you know, a representative of the UFC, came out, you know, he lives in upstate New York. He came out to Los Angeles to where this meeting, or there's actually, I think, Inglewood, wherever, but it was wherever in the LA area it was taking place. Those are three of the major commissions, which all UFC back in the day was proactive with. And the other one was the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And I seem to remember in April of 1999, an abortive, well, the hearing wasn't abortive, but there was originally an attempt to get the UFC approved by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And it didn't happen at the time. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you recall from that, because it's not exactly something that somebody does who's trying to run away from commissions, going to every major commission in the country.
Well, you're leading me into, you know, an area that I really don't like to talk about. But the fact is that we went before, or was scheduled to go before, the Nevada Athletic Commission. And as we did with every athletic commission, we worked very hard to make sure everybody understood it and everyone knew what we were doing and what we were talking about. And there was a new young commissioner who seemed to like it, and it looked like we had all the votes we needed. And the night before, at midnight, I got a call telling me that this young commissioner decided this was just wrong for Nevada and that it would be a big mistake for Nevada to approve it. And so that commissioner changed his mind and was going to vote again.
Mm-hmm. Do you happen to recall his name? Or what he's doing now? Or maybe it's obvious.
Well, for anybody who doesn't know, that commissioner was named Lorenzo Fertitta.
I've heard of him.
Well, so, but as you said, Eddie, we really worked with every commission. We never, never hid from anybody. We believed very, very, very strongly that we were in the right, that we had a great sport, that we had great athletes, and we worked hard to have great athletes. We had Jeff Blatnick, who was an Olympic gold medal winner, as the commissioner.
Who's still on the board of USA Wrestling also.
He traveled everywhere talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing hidden here.
Mm-hmm.
What we think now is a good time to come back and to do something new. I will tell you that there's going to be a new fighting surface. I think this new fighting surface is once again going to...
Now, this is in a show you're trying to co-organize now?
That's correct.
Okay.
That will, once again, dramatically change the sport and make it better.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the status is of this new thing you're trying to do?
Yeah, we have brought together a bunch of people, fighters, and put together people who I think are stars and have star appeal.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look at what the AFL did, how they created a new league, Sonny Werblin hired a guy named Joe Namath. Joe Namath was a great athlete and a great star.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we are at. We're about to do something that is going to, I think, shake up the sport. I think it needs a little, really and truly, since I started it, I think 13 years ago, nothing new has happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for something new. It's time for it to get a little boost. And I think once this comes along, everything else will have to come along with it.
Do you have a time frame? Because as we talk, not everything is in place. So you don't have, we're running a show on such and such a date and all that.
No, you're correct. I don't have that in place yet, but I think we will certainly before September.
Okay.
So we're very close, and that's where we're working on.
Now, how about us mixed martial arts media? Because a certain other company with the initials Azufa is running a lot of people out, and even threw out Jeremy Lappin, the CEO of the WFA, had a ticket to be at the recent UFC show, and they threw him out of the building. And what's your attitude going to be to the mixed martial arts media, and also the other promoters that are out there?
As you know, we always, always welcome the media. As you know, we treated you, Dave Meltzer, Joel Gold, with all the respect you so rightfully deserved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not making that up. You're all great. You're all good to us and good to the sport. Sport can't exist without that. I have no idea. It is incomprehensible to me why they would keep the press out.
I think they want to control the flow of information because a lot of the people that you mentioned from the past know the real history, know something about the sport, and can ask a lot of the questions you asked. That what does it mean that you're having a 39-year-old Royce Gracie in there? You know, just like what would it mean to have a 40-year-old Mike Tyson fight? Does that take away from his earlier legacy, where he is now?
Who's better, Roger Federer or Jimmy Connors? Okay, let's have him play right now.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Federer wins. Okay, so Roger Federer is better than... No, of course not. You know, what we're looking to do, as I say, is reinvigorate the sport. Certainly, I welcome all the people who really know the sport, and that I think would be the mixed martial arts press and the fighting press. In terms of other promoters, you know, I used to regularly meet with all of the others. You want to build a sport. I'd rather have a Super Bowl.
Exactly.
My event.
So, and a lot of promoters, say that when they're not at the top. Zufa said exactly that, as you remember when they took over, and they didn't want to have it. And the only time it seems they're working with Pride is now when Pride is in a very serious situation because of the Yakuza scandal and getting kicked off of Fuji TV, the broadcast network in Japan, and Pride is searching around, and they felt may have been knocked out of the perch of being the largest mixed martial arts company in the world because of that, and so now they're going to sort of save themselves by going to UFC, and UFC, whatever their motives are, I think they may get the short end of this deal, but in any case, they're only working with Pride now that they're in a desperate situation, rather than when working with, you know, WFA, IFL, you know, King of the Cage, and so many other organizations.
You know, I can't answer for them. I don't know why. But I think it is imperative that you want to grow a sport. This is the thing. These are the things you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think it comes to looking at it as a sport and not a spectacle.
There we go. I'm going to have to dig out that article I did in 97 again, called exactly that, and caused a lot of waves back in those days. But as you know, I'm not averse to doing that from like every 5 minutes. It's on. At this point, before everything is finalized, do you have either a website or a MySpace account or some way for people, be they fans or fighters or media or whatever, to get in touch with you and find out more information?
There will be next week.
Okay.
And if you give me a call Monday or Tuesday of next week, I will give you all that information.
Cool. And if you send out an email on that, we'll make sure that all the people that I know know about that, and all the people that listen to this show. What it seems is that one thing I remember asking you back in the day, you know, you haven't lost interest in this after all these years. You still like it. It's not just a business thing. We're not just doing something like that, because it's a risky venture at this point to get into this kind of business. And I know you were very prominent and well-known in the music business and radio and all the things that are much more established. But going back into this after everything you went in is quite an interesting development.
Well, I have said, and I'm sure I have said it to you, but I've said it to many people many times over the years, the most intriguing men I have ever met have been these fighters. And when you said something before, you said any one of these guys would get in and fight. You know, whoever you wanted, they are A, so talented, B, so brave, and C, so really, really tough. They're extraordinary men. And one thing I will also tell you about my new show, there'll be women in it as well.
Great. That's absolutely great.
And so while I keep using the word men, these are fighters.
All right. I think we covered a lot of ground and opened a lot of things, and I hope I'm going to open some people's minds on some of this. And if any of these, this is something I know isn't going to happen. I know when I say this, I know who's going to contact me and who's going to not. But if any of these journalists want to get in touch with you, they can contact me. They can give me an email at nhbnews@gmail.com. But I know that the people who are going to want to speak to you now are going to be the MMA journalists, the people that know the sport already. And I don't anticipate any of these mainstream people at this point wanting to learn about the facts. I think they'd rather just repeat the mythology put out by the PR people and the Zuffa people.
Well, I think it is just sometimes lazy and taking the easy way out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't
okay.
think they're getting paid by anybody to do it. I just think they're just not. Here, you get a press release, you write it up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, I really look forward to being back in this. I look forward to having tremendous athletes, tremendous competition, really make this exciting and a lot of fun. And it doesn't have to be.
All right. And I also want to thank, I don't know whether it's...
You know, you don't have to be like A-Rod. You know? You don't have to be wound so tight that you can't enjoy it. This is a great sport, and it should be enjoyed.
Okay, I also just have to give a shout-out. I don't know whether it's Verizon or the NSA or whatever for adding some interference during our conversation or the heat or whatever, but that's the source of it, and I don't know. I'm an old telecom guy and I try to work around it, but we apologize for that. We're kind of stuck. And Bob, you got to get another IATA studio. You got to get another thing so I don't have to do this stuff from home on these crummy lines, so we get like a fancy thing. I don't know if that's going to come back or not, but that was way ahead of its time. But I think it was right on the...
Let me do this now in its time. All right.
Very good. Bob Meyerowitz, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule to do this. We're looking forward to when this gets finalized and this announcement, and I think good things going to come of it.
Eddie Goldman, a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That, of course, was Bob Meyerowitz, and we'll be keeping you up to date when the official announcement comes, not only of their website, but of their new company, dates, fighters, TV networks, the whole bit, all of which still has to be finalized as we record this show. Before we wrap this up, another word about our sponsors, including our newest sponsor in No Holds Barred, Chin Check Sportswear. We're very proud on No Holds Barred to have a series of sponsors from the world of combat sports, all of whom make it possible for you to listen to this show for free. And we want to make sure that you keep supporting all of these great sponsors. We call the show No Holds Barred not because the sport known as mixed martial arts carries that tag anymore, but because this show is No Holds Barred. We tell it like it is. We tell you the truth, and that's what we want you to do by supporting our sponsors. First up, we welcome our newest sponsor to No Holds Barred, ChinCheck.com. That's ChinCheck.com. Your online store for mixed martial arts, boxing, and kickboxing clothing, including shirts, fight shorts, hoodies, hats, and more. Wear what the pros wear, like Frank Shamrock, Chris Lytle, and Ron Waterman at ChinCheck, ChinCheck.com. Check them out. BJJMart.com, just like it sounds, your premier source for all Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gear, videos, books, and much more. Check them out, BJJMart.com. King of the Cage at KingOfTheCage.com. The number one cage fighting promotion on the planet. As well, look for their pay-per-views coming up on cable and satellite, and check them out, kingofthecage.com. Those are our sponsors, and just like they support us, make sure you support them. That's going to do it for this edition of No Holds Barred. You want to contact us, send us an email at nhbnews@gmail.com. Also, make sure to check out my blog at nhbnews.blogspot.com. Also, you can use that NHB News to look me up on myspace.com/NHBNews. You can get my profile there with all kinds of information. Of course, I'm still very much involved in the world of boxing, hosting the weekly Seconds Out radio show at secondsout.com/radio, writing a column for Mike Marley's new site, FightNightNews.com. Of course, also a senior contributing editor on the Abu Dhabi site at news.adcombat.com and the ADCC News. Still writing, and again, a senior contributing editor for Tap Out Magazine and a few others that we expect to announce pretty soon. Thanks for listening in. We're glad you stuck out this lengthy, but what I feel incredibly interesting show with our guest Bob Meyerowitz. For No Holds Barred, this has been Eddie Goldman.